Well, thanks everyone again for coming out. I appreciate you taking some time to talk with me.
Sure.
With the interagency delegation here in Bucharest, and we're coming here at a particularly important moment, obviously. It's perhaps the most consequential moment we've faced in Europe for the last 30 years. We are marking this year the 25th anniversary of the strategic partnership between the United States and Romania, and that's a very important milestone for us in the United States. Unfortunately, we're marking that milestone at a moment of great peril here in Europe, given what's going on not too far from here on the Russia-Ukraine border and, of course, in the Black Sea. Just today, I think later tonight, U.S. troops will be arriving as part of the 1,000 or so contingent coming in to reinforce our NATO ally here in Romania, which is a testament to our commitment to Article 5 of the NATO Treaty, and the testament to the very, very important work the United States and Romania have been conducting together in military affairs for the last decade plus. Really since Romania came into NATO in the early 2000s. And I know that next week at the Defense Ministerial in Brussels, there will also be important discussions at NATO about further bolstering Romania. I've had great discussions today here in Bucharest at the Foreign Ministry, with the Foreign Minister, at the Presidency, at the Ministry of Defense, where we received a comprehensive briefing from the Chief of Defense and his team, as well as with the Energy Minister just now. Very, very good discussions, rich discussions about the crisis of the moment, but also the partnership we have and our ambitions for the future, not just to get through the next few weeks or months, but what we're hoping to achieve when we next gather 25 years from now for the 50th anniversary of our strategic partnership. What I'm doing with the team here is part of a multi-lines of effort enterprise that the United States government has been pursuing when it comes to the Russia-Ukraine crisis really over the last several months. First and foremost, it's to bolster our allies and partners, and that's why the troops arriving are so important, and it's something that we're committed to do not just here in this part of the eastern flank, but up north as well as at sea and in air over the coming weeks and months. Secondly, obviously, we are working all together to help bolster Ukraine's resilience. The United States, along with other partners for many years now, has been working to make the Ukrainian military more capable and more effective. That's something we're continuing as we speak. But also, we need to work together to make Ukrainian society more resilient and to help meet the tremendous needs that they have and that they could be facing in the future. Third is to have a very aggressive diplomatic effort, and the United States, either through our bilateral channels and the strategic stability dialogue that we've had with the Russians, or, of course, through NATO and the NATO-Russia Council, or the OSCE, we are intent on showing to Moscow that the door to diplomacy remains open and that we are willing to engage with them on issues of mutual interest with reciprocity. But that there are certain issues that are going to be off the table. NATO's open door will not be reconsidered. We will not be allowing any country, but particularly Moscow, to determine Ukraine's fate. The relationship the United States has built with our partners in NATO here on the eastern flank over the last 25 or so years is something that we are very proud of, and we are not going to be rolling back. So those demands that the Russian side has put forth are things that are non-negotiable. However, there are some areas, for example, in greater transparency in military exercises or disposition of offensive missiles that we could discuss with them, but again, on a reciprocal basis. There are also some deep concerns we have about Russian military exercises or Russian missile deployments that we would need to discuss with them. And then fourth and finally, if Russia were to choose not to take this route to diplomacy, ensuring that there are going to be consequences if they decide to further invade Ukraine. And that's something the United States has been working very closely with our European partners here in Bucharest, in Brussels, and throughout Europe, as well as with others around the world, to ensure that the Russia would face severe and swift consequences if we were to choose to continue to escalate the situation and further invade Ukraine. And we have made that very clear to colleagues in Moscow publicly and privately. I should also just close with this. The foundational principle of our approach, of the Biden administration's approach to this crisis, has been there is no such thing as too much consultation, that throughout this crisis, from the very beginnings in late October, early November, when we started to see indications of this escalation, to this very moment, we have been trying to share as much as we can with allies and partners, engage as much as possible, be as transparent in what we are doing diplomatically, militarily, and also have our ears open and listen to concerns of allies and partners who are also acutely concerned with the situation at hand. And then secondly, and a corollary to that, nothing about you without you. And so first and foremost, that regards Ukraine. We're not going to be negotiating anything about Ukraine without Ukraine, but also in regards to European security. There'll be no discussion about European security without the Europeans being fully involved, and that's why this multi-track diplomatic process of U.S. bilateral issue, Russia bilateral issues where appropriate, but most importantly, NATO and OSCE tracks are very, very important. So that's the spirit with which we have come here to Bucharest. It was very, very important for us to make this trip at this moment. I've had great cooperation and great meetings with colleagues here. And with that, I'll look forward to your questions. Thank you.
So why don't we do this? Why don't we start with the ladies and we'll work our way around the table. Please, Elena.
Thank you.
Well, you had rich discussion. You just told us with Romanian officials. Question, how prepared is Romania in this very moment for a hot conflict?
Mm-hmm.
We really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
We hope for the best, but we have to be prepared. So in terms of receiving refugees,
mm-hmm.
American official talked already about millions. So how prepared do you find Romania is for receiving and helping these people? And how many, I know it is not the point, but how much U.S. Is going to invest in Romania's resilience if a hot mm-hmm. conflict will mm-hmm. will reach us somehow?
Sure.
Another question, it comes from a child, actually.
Okay.
And even if this is a very serious discussion, I think it's common sense. All Western leaders expressed support for Ukraine integrity.
Mm-hmm.
Many sent heavy weaponry, mm-hmm. including U.S.
Mm-hmm.
But why Western countries are not defending Ukraine if mm-hmm. a Russian invasion mm-hmm. will be produced by Putin
yep.
regime? It seems naive, but I think that it is important to know why European, U.S. leader are trying to mm-hmm. avoid escalation mm-hmm. of global mm-hmm. conflict.
So to your first questions, I'm very impressed with the level of preparation that I heard today from colleagues here in Bucharest, and the Romanian government is thinking through, I think, all of the issues and all the various contingencies. Now, this is a very complicated set of challenges, and all of us collectively are having to think through the various vectors that this crisis could take, of course, if the worst happens. And part of the conversation was efforts that we're collectively making to try to avert the worst from happening, but we have to be prepared, clearly. Part of the reason that up to 1,000 additional U.S. troops are going to be entering Romania over the next several days is to be prepared in any contingency. We did have an opportunity to discuss the potential for a refugee crisis as a result of any Russian military action. I don't want to get into details on that, but it's certainly something that I'm coming away from this talk or from this visit and talking with Romanian colleagues, confident that they're thinking through this contingency. We in the United States are as well, as I know other Europeans are, And I think we need to be thinking through that this could be something of quite a large scale, and we need to be prepared. So I think the level of preparation at this point, I think, is a fairly positive level. On Romanian resilience, again, I think we, the United States, are committed to doing whatever we can to help build Romanian resilience, whether that's in helping bolstering Romanian security through our military cooperation. Also, the conversation I had, for example, with the energy minister just a few moments ago was a good conversation about what were to happen if there was a energy crisis here in Europe or gas supplies were interrupted somehow or cut off. What can the world do to help Romania make sure that it's can get overcome these challenges? All of us are thinking about this because I think energy prices, high energy prices, could affect all of us, clearly. So that's something we are working through intensively with colleagues around the world who can help Romania and others if and when there is an energy crisis as a result of any Russian military action. In terms of our military support for Ukraine, and our president, President Biden, has spoken very openly about this, about there's no intention at all to insert U.S. forces into this crisis directly. That said, we are doing what we can to help build Ukrainian resilience, and there's a very in-depth conversation that the United States and others have been having the Ukrainians about some of their defensive needs, and we are helping provide them with much of those defensive needs, along with other partners. Ukraine's not a NATO ally. We have a solemn obligation, the United States, to stand by our NATO allies, and that's, again, one of the reasons why our military forces are coming into Romania right now. It's one of the reasons why I'm here right now. And Ukraine, we don't have that legal obligation, but we do have an obligation, I think, to do what we can to help them through this crisis, which is profound and is not of their making. I want to be very clear of that. This is something that, despite what we may hear from Moscow, this is not a crisis precipitated in any way by actions in Kyiv. This is completely a crisis of choice by Moscow. And so we need to stand by our Ukrainian partners. That's what the United States has been doing for 8+ years since the crisis first exploded in 2014, and we're determined to do so today. Thank you. Thank you. And that was a good question, by the way. My 7-year-old daughter often asks me the hardest questions. Often asks me the hardest questions.
You mentioned discussed the contingency plans for the refugee inflows.
Yeah.
Is Romania preparing for thousands, for tens of thousands, for more than that?
Yeah.
You said we should expect quite a large scale. And
we could. I mean, look, I don't want to get into details about numbers, but there's a range of concerns we have, from the least to the worst. And all I can say is that I come away convinced that the Romanian government understands the challenges, and we in the United States do as well, and we're committed to working together to think through those contingencies, and if they were to come to fruition, work together to try to address them.
If they were to come to fruition, would Romania take the brunt of the refugee inflows?
You know, I can't speculate on that because it just depends. I mean, there's multiple countries that border Ukraine and you could see a refugee situation developing. So I don't want to speculate on how this might develop. I think it's incumbent upon us to plan for the worst as well, and just to continue to think through all the various contingencies and go from there.
Okay. You mentioned the NATO defense ministers meeting mm-hmm. in Brussels next week, and potential plans for the bolstering Romania
yeah.
in terms of troops.
Mm-hmm.
Will the U.S. be a part of those plans as well?
So those plans are still under development, and obviously I don't want to get ahead of the NATO defense ministers' conversation next week in Brussels. I will be in Brussels myself tomorrow, and we'll be checking in at NATO as well as at the EU to talk through what I've heard over the course of today in Bucharest as well as yesterday in Bulgaria. So I will be smarter at the end of the day tomorrow. But look, the United States, the bottom line is we will stand by our NATO commitment. And We've been doing so here in Romania for quite some time. We're adding to that starting today. And obviously, depending on whatever decisions NATO takes in terms of bolstering the effort here, we'll be part of that in any way that's appropriate.
Thank you.
Carmen?
While in Russia, President Macron has used the expression, we should work with Russia on a new strategic European strategic architecture. Mm-hmm. This kind of wording is causing cold sweats in Romania, because everything that's supposed to bring something new, and we are pleased with what we have now.
Yeah.
Did the French speak to you about how would such a thing would look like? And it's quite new compared to what we've heard until yesterday.
So I can't speak for President Macron. And I've only heard reports of what he said out of Moscow. I didn't see it myself since I was traveling. So I don't want to speak to that because I don't actually know. All I can say is from a U.S. perspective, well, two things. First, we have been in constant contact with French colleagues. As you know, anyone engaging on this crisis, we've been talking to either in person or by video or by phone over the last several months. And in particular, as the diplomacy has been accelerating, those conversations have only accelerated. The United States is not interested in refashioning European security architecture. That's very clear in the response that we, the United States, gave to Moscow several weeks ago now, as well as the NATO response that we collectively gave. We have not yet received the full response from Moscow, from our letter or our paper from a few weeks ago. So we'll await to see that response before we know the next steps diplomatically. We're hopeful, of course, that they are willing to continue to talk in areas that we've outlined that we think would be appropriate to talk to them about. But refashioning European security architecture is not one of those areas. To the extent that we would talk about anything regarding the future of European security architecture, it's not going to happen without Europe being involved, without our mm-hmm. allies and partners here being involved. And I know there was a meeting at the OSCE yesterday to continue the conversation there. We, of course, are hopeful that there'll be further engagements at NATO. And then in any bilateral engagement we have with the Russians, to the extent any of it touches on any of our European partners' interests, we're going to be doing that in full consultation with our European allies.
And my second question is, Romania has been asking for years now for a better, a more balanced NATO presence mm-hmm. on the eastern flank. Mm-hmm. It's not like we are saying we told you so to the other allies. But Monday, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has said that NATO is contemplating the idea of a more intense or a bigger NATO presence on the eastern flank mm-hmm. for a longer mm-hmm. time. Mm-hmm. And I understand there's the wording is quite delicate, because he's not saying permanent, but he's saying persistent mm-hmm. presence. Mm-hmm. What's the difference? And what should we expect in terms of the U.S.? Would you support such an idea? I understand it's going to be talked about in the ministerial.
Well, as I said, as I responded to the previous question, I don't want to get ahead of the NATO defense ministers, and I think all of us are thinking anew about our security posture in Romania and in the southern part of the eastern flank. And I think we have to understand that this crisis, even if we have a satisfying resolution of it, will probably create an enduring security challenge for the future. Now, if the worst happens and Russia follows through on what we're worried that they're preparing to do, That, of course, will create an enduring security challenge and one that will, I think, all of us have to think anew about things. So I think the discussions at NATO are going to be very, very important, and they're just beginning. But I think our contribution, it's the bilateral one right now, which is the force that's flowing in, will look to augment anything that NATO does. And I think the U.S. generally would be supportive of any NATO efforts to build up the battle group here, because I think clearly Romania is facing acute threats from the situation unfolding not too far from here with the Russian escalation.
Just a follow up,
sure.
Because it's connected with this idea of moving troops if needed.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is the Russians can move troops in Ukraine very quickly,
mm-hmm.
according to your specialists, it's in 48 hours they mm-hmm. could be near Kiev.
Mm-hmm.
And we go back to the issue that's been talked about for years now, about military mobility in Europe,
mm-hmm.
which is a problem.
Huge, yes. It look, I think it's been an enduring problem. It's crises like this where we focus on some of these enduring problems the most. I mean, I recall it was 8 years ago at Wales when the NATO alliance finally came together on the Wales pledge to spend 2% of GDP on defense needs. I mean, the idea that there had been an asymmetry between U.S. and Europe on defense was not a new concept, but it was a crisis in Ukraine 8 years ago that caused NATO allies to come together to come up with a Wales Pledge, which I'm glad to and proud to say here in Romania that Romania is fulfilling. So I think this crisis is, again, making us think anew about European security and about the needs and the challenges and what we should be doing differently. We in the United States are trying to take a very open mind to that and be willing to take the necessary steps to ensure that our allies are secure and that our Article 5 commitments are met.
Andrea?
Hi. Are there new indications that Russia military action is imminent? And should that happen, what are the risks of conflict spilling into the neighboring countries? And the second one, are there new indications that Russia will keep its troops in Belarus after the Union Resolve 2022?
Yeah. So I'll take the last one first. We're very concerned about the Russian deployment in Belarus, as I know our partners in the Baltics and Poland in particular are very concerned, both for what that might mean for their plans for Ukraine as well as what that means for the security posture on the northern part of the eastern flank. So Russia claims that they're there for an exercise and then they'll be withdrawn. We will see if that in fact happens, but I can say that deployment there has us very concerned and we're watching very closely. When it comes to the question of the timing of any Russian action, our assessment is that they're in the window, meaning that you know, we don't know that when they're going to act. Our assessment remains that Putin still has not made up his mind about whether or not he's going to act. But they do have plenty of capability in place to take military action. It's just a matter of what their goals are and if they're still, by our indications, adding capability each day, including some naval vessels just today in the Black Sea, is my understanding. So they're continuing to add capability, but our assessment is they already have capability to take an action if they were to choose to do so.
Okay. Can I just follow?
Sure.
The French president, Mr. Macron, said that Putin said there won't be a Russian permanent military base or deployment in Belarus where Russia sent the troops for war games, but NATO is looking to increase its military presence in the Baltic states and Poland in case Russia keeps its troops in Belarus after the planned military exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Will that be in the talks in NATO this Thursday?
Look, I think bolstering the eastern flank from north to south is atop the NATO agenda, no question about it. And one thing we have made very clear to the Russian side is that if they continue this course of escalation And if they choose to take the military path regarding Ukraine, they're going to see more NATO capability on the eastern flank. And of course, the NATO capability that existed before we started to add more, so the NATO capability that existed at the beginning of this year, was there as a result of the incursion 8 years ago. So that's just a reflection of our determination to live up to our obligation to our NATO partners, our NATO allies, and to do whatever we can to ensure that our NATO allies are defended.
Your note?
Yep. How efficient do you really think that the preparations for these sanctions are in terms of discouraging Putin? I mean, really, your sincere opinion on that.
So all I can say is that the sanctions that we have been working on with European partners, and there's a team from Washington in Europe right now, I believe they're traveling to Brussels and other capitals, led by our Treasury Department, is continuing those conversations as we speak this week, that those sanctions are robust, and that if Russia were to take action, the consequences would be swift and severe. I can't speculate about how that affects Putin's calculations. We've made very clear that these consequences will be coming quickly and that they will be felt by Russia and the Russian people. And that's the best we can do. I can't speculate on how that's influencing his behavior. That's something only he could answer.
And because you mentioned Putin's calculations, what do you think are his real goals, his real aims with this pressure on Western Ukraine?
Yeah, I mean, again, I can't speculate on that. Or I mean, I don't want it. I don't know if it's kind of a guessing game that everyone has. Is it about Donbass? Is it about Ukrainian history? What is it about reconstituting the Soviet Union? I mean, it's kind of dealer's choice on what that could be. To me, it's sort of beside the point. I mean, the point is that NATO's door will remain open. No country should be able to control another country's choices about who they choose to ally with. Those are sort of fundamental principles, not just for Ukraine or for even for Europe, of international law and the international order. So we see this as upholding something larger than just a dispute, a territorial dispute in one part of the world. It's holding up a larger principle. And that's a point that Secretary Blinken, President Biden, all of us in the administration have been making, not just to European partners, but to partners all around the world who have an interest in upholding that order.
As you said before, in this Ukrainian crisis, Ukraine is not the main factor. The key factor is NATO expansion to Eastern Europe and Russian demands, claims to NATO retreat. Mm-hmm. Behind the 1997 line. And this is a very clear statement of Russia. And we didn't see any breakthrough after Macron, probably after German Chancellor in Moscow. All we see is this long table. yeah.
And COVID protocols are being
next,
followed. Right.
What's next to negotiate? How do you describe this moment? Because there are no dialogue there. Just this statement, as Mr. Putin said, the beautiful Ukraine has to stay and endure.
Yeah.
What has happened?
Well, as I said, we are making clear that the door for diplomacy remains open. I can't speak to the conversation that the French president and President Putin had yesterday. Secretary Blinken last week spoke to the Russian foreign minister about the situation. Then he was told that the Russians would be responding to our paper as well as NATO's paper. And so as we await that response, we'll see what that response says and then what potential way forward on diplomacy could be. And of course, the United States are not the only ones engaging in diplomacy. The German Chancellor was in Washington on Monday, had very good discussions with President Biden about the situation, and my understanding is the German Chancellor will also be visiting Moscow in the coming days. So, look, it's incumbent upon us as allies to send the message that we do remain open to diplomacy in good faith on certain issues, but that certain issues will not be up for discussion. We've made that very clear, and we've been consistent about that. And I think the test will be whether the Russian side sees this as a matter of sort of pragmatic problem solving? Are there things that they're worried about, NATO exercises or the possibility of offensive missiles being deployed in certain parts of Europe? If that's their worry, then we can perhaps talk about some of that in terms of mutual agreements, in terms of transparency on exercises or missile deployments or things of that nature. But it would have to be reciprocal, because we have concerns on the Russian side about their exercises and their deployments. If, though, it's more of a matter of principle or ideology, if it's about the very fact that NATO still exists, or that new members have joined NATO, if it's, in fact, about being angry that the U.S. is still a major player in Europe and that there's a strong transatlantic partnership, it's harder to see any way that we're going to come to any agreement on that. So we have to test the Russian side and see what they'd be willing to discuss. In the meantime, we have to make sure that Ukraine is resilient, that our allies are defended, and that we are working together to plan through any contingency that may arise out of for any Russian military action.
Speaking about energy, Romania has important reserves in gas, mm-hmm. onshore and offshore. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, Exxon is leaving Romania. Did you discuss with the Romanian energy officials about the exploitation of this amount of gas in the Black Sea? What perspectives are in this field?
Sure. Well, we talked about at the energy ministry, of course, about the crisis and what may come of the crisis, and as I said earlier, about ways to ensure that if there were a shortage of gas here in Europe, ways that the United States working with other partners can help mitigate some of those impacts. We also talked very importantly about our medium to long-term energy partnership with Romania and the very important agreement that was struck last fall between your president actually former Secretary Kerry at COP on the small modular reactors and the progress we're making together in implementing that agreement, as well as the refurbishment of an existing reactor. And I think it's very exciting what is happening here in Romania in terms of the potential for your not only energy independence, but being a net energy exporter in the future. And that's something we in the United States are very keen to work with you on and see great hopes for what could be accomplished here. In the meantime, we recognize we have to work together to try to get through what could be a quite substantial crisis in the near term.
One more question. Sure. Speaking about resilience, you said we have to assure Ukraine is resilient in this crisis, but in the same manner, we have to assure Romania is resilient, mm-hmm. or NATO is resilient.
Sure.
And what we see in Romania, we see nationalistic parties, anti-Semitic, xenophobic messages rising. Mm-hmm. And it is a strategy, could be a strategy between the two parts, USA and Romania, in counter this disinformation, fake news, and all the weaponry in communication. And the situation is not so bright in Romania speaking in this matter, because it's a lot of people thinking it's a conspiracy. Putin has some reasons to act in this way because it's a large pro-Russian propaganda and mm-hmm. anti-American and mm-hmm. anti-NATO.
Yeah. Well, great question. I'm glad you raised that. It's, as you know, the United States, we're not immune from this kind of disinformation ourselves in terms of our own internal debate, and well aware of what Russia in particular is up to try to stir up doubts and questions about what is in fact happening. This is out of the old playbook. I mean, we have seen this before. It's one of the reasons why we have tried very hard to make public intelligence that we've had about some of what Russia might be up to, or we believe is up to, in Ukraine. But I think building our resilience when it comes to potential cyber attacks as well as disinformation is something we did discuss today with colleagues here in Bucharest. Also discussed it yesterday in Bulgaria, and I know this has been a topic of discussion at NATO. In fact, our president's top cybersecurity advisor, Anne Neuberger, was in Brussels and Warsaw last week, and I know she met with counterparts from Bucharest who I think videoed into a meeting in Warsaw about cybersecurity issues in light of the current crisis. So we recognize that of the many contingencies we have to be thinking through, this is one of them, both an actual cyber attack, something that would impede our ability to, you know, operate through cyberspace, or the disinformation campaigns that we're all subjected to, that we're all seeing ramp up in their own ways. You're certainly seeing it here. We're also seeing it in the United States.